Welcoming everybody, Rabbi Zeif, for an opportunity to learn on Memorial Day. And we have the opportunity to hear from a Talmud Chacham who is involved in a cutting-edge shaila, which can affect all of us. It's a kavod gadol to be able to hear from David Cohen Shlita on the fish controversy. What are the facts? That's Hatzlacha Rabba to all of us.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. And I see the cover of the topic. They started to not serve bagels and lox. Keep us all safe and give us danishes. Okay. What I'm going to speak about is going to be divided into two parts. And the first part is going to be, if I can describe it as such, the Gemara says that there's such a thing as learning to be Meshamash Amidei Chachamim. Being Meshamash Amidei Chachamim means that many times in learning, we find different things that seem to be questions or opposites of each other or something that's not clear. And a person needs to learn from his Rebbe how to answer that question. What do I do when I'm faced with two things that don't seem to work together? And to the people here who have learned Gemara, you're familiar with that. You open up a Tosis and Tosis says, the Gemara here says this way, and I have another Gemara that seems to say not like that. How do I understand these two things? And being Meshamash Hamid HaChacham means to understand. So what do I do now? Now that I'm stuck with this question, how's the right way to answer that kind of a question? So the first part of what we're going to talk about is going to be exactly something like that, which is as follows. The Torah tells us that we're not allowed to eat bugs, worms. For the rest of today, we're going to use the word worms to describe what we're talking about, because in fact, that's what the Shiloh is about. The Torah says you're not allowed to eat worms. But most people are surprised to hear that not every single worm is also eat to us. To the average person on the street, you say to them, you don't want to eat bugs. They say, of course, all bugs and worms, you don't want to eat any of those things. But in fact, that's not exactly true. And the Gemara says the following. In order for a bug to be usher, if it's a water-based bug, that bug has to have moved around in the water first for it to become usher. And for a land-based bug, it has the same thing. The bug is not usher unless it's walked on the ground first. As an example of that. Some of you may have heard that a year or so ago there was a whole to-do about whether raisins have bugs in them. Okay, and the reason why, the raisins do have bugs in them, but the reason why you're allowed to eat those raisins is because it's Zataz who brings down that, and it's very true scientifically also, that the bugs that come into the raisins after they're off the tree, and the bug moves into the raisin, it spends its whole life inside that one raisin, and therefore, the bug never walked on the ground. It spent its life in a raisin, and therefore, that bug is not usher. If you happen to be, it disgusts you to eat it, then you shouldn't eat it. You're probably not allowed to if it disgusts you. But from the din, the fact that it never walked on the ground means that it's not usher. So in the water, the Gemara says that the same thing applies in the water, that if it never swam around in the water, it's not usher. And therefore, the Gemara says the following rule. If you have a worm that's in the intestines of a fish, that worm is usher because it's possible that that worm was floating around in the water, was swallowed by the fish, and now you're finding it inside his intestines, so you say, okay, that worm swam around in the water, that's an usher worm, now that worm is inside the fish, so that worm is still usher. But the Gemara says, what happens if the worm is not in the intestines, but the worm is in the flesh of the fish? Then we assume the worm never was outside. The worm spent its entire life inside that fish. It grew inside that fish. And that worm is mutter. Because that worm, it's just as much of a worm as the other worm is, but this worm never swam outside. To explain to you what I mean is the worm that we're talking about, what they call the Anasaki's worm, that we're talking about, it's quite a long worm. It's maybe 2 inches, an inch, 2 inches long. It's a big, it's a nice-sized worm. You wouldn't notice it in your fish because it curls itself up into a little, you wouldn't notice it, just looks like a discoloration in the fish, but when you pull it out, it's this big, and it's nice and curly, it's not very appetizing once you see it. So the thing is like this, so that's what the Gemara says, that's what the Shulchan Aruch brings down. There are some Rishonim who don't read the Gemara this way, but just about everybody does. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. If you have a worm inside of the flesh of your fish, it's mutter. No one argues on that thing. No one argues on that, that's the Psak Halacha. The question is, that science nowadays believes, science has believed for many years, that the worms that are in the flesh of the fish don't grow inside the flesh. The Gemara says they come from inside the flesh. Science believes there are some that may actually lay, some worms may lay their eggs in the fish, and the whole worm grows his whole life in the egg. But most of the worms, and we're focusing now on this one, the Anisakis worm, most worms don't do that. They are laid out in the ocean. In the ocean, they hatch into little worms, where they get swallowed by the little fish, and as, you know, proverbially, the little fish gets eaten by the big fish, and the big fish gets eaten by the even bigger fish, and eventually it makes its way into the fish that we eat, a piece of cod. The cod will eat the fish that's a little bit smaller, and the worm will be inside it. So, how can we say that the worm is mutter when it's in the flesh? Because it grew there, because its whole life has been inside of a flesh, and it never swam around outside, when science tells us that it's not true. We look around, and we'll, in the second part, we'll talk about some of the, not only the scientific evidence, some of the things that people themselves, you know, average people have seen themselves, that seems to indicate that it comes from the intestines and moves into the flesh. Well, that doesn't make sense. If in the intestines it's osur, how did it become mutter if it gets into the flesh? If it goes from the intestines into the flesh? That's our dilemma. That's our question we have to deal with. And that's what we're going to try to answer that question. Depending on how you answer that question, these worms are either going to be mutter or they're going to be asur. Okay? We're going to see there are going to be, we'll say there are going to be five answers to this question. Excuse me. According to the first three answers, the worms are going to be asur. And according to the last two answers, the worms are going to be mutter. So in this, talking about these answers, we're going to present you the different sides of each of those, what's the strength and weaknesses of those answers, and then we'll see why. Now, I am going to, in disclosure, going to tell you that I work for the CRC. The CRC and many other hashgachas hold that the worms are mutter, so you're unfortunately going to be hearing a biased view of this. I'm going to present to you both sides, but you're going to hear a biased view of what's going on. But we're going to present the different sides of the argument as to which of these answers is right. Okay, so we have our first answer. I'm going to say it only so you shouldn't think that this is the correct answer. This is not a correct answer. And we'll come back to this answer way further down. And the first answer is, when Chazal made their statements, when the Gemara says statements about certain dinim that are based on science or based on practical information, so there are people who have said, well, the Chachamim went to the local scientist and they asked him what to do. Much like Rabbi Cohen, if he had a shayla about something electrical, he wanted to know a question about could he use a video camera on Shabbos. So he would say, well, I have to first talk to someone who knows about electronics, someone who understands what's going on before I can decide on the shayla. So there are people who say, what they do is, the Chazal asked the people out in the scientists in those days believed in something called spontaneous generation, that things can come from nothing, living items can grow from nothing. And guess what? It's been disproven. It's not true. There's no such thing. So if Chazal based it on that kind of something, that kind of science, the science is not true, so the din is not true also. Okay? So I say this answer because this is nobody, no legitimate Pesach would ever say such an answer like this. I might make a mistake. Anybody sitting in this room might base some din that they said based on science. We may be completely making a mistake. We're willing to take that. We don't say such things about Chazal. Chazal got their things, when it says that din, the Gemara is coming, halach l'mesh m'sinai, they have Kabbalahs about the din. They didn't make it up based on what Jose told them next door. And therefore, we don't say about Chazal that, oh, you know, they got the science wrong. They didn't know what they were talking about exactly. We don't talk like that about the what it says, something in the Gemara says that din based on a piece of Matzias. We don't say that. There are people who would say that, but it's not, nobody mainstream would say, look, they didn't know what they're talking about. They blew it. Okay, so I mentioned this answer. We're going to come back to it later, but mention this as like not even a real answer. So, okay, now we're going to say two legitimate answers to why. What are we supposed to do? The Gemara says the worms from the flesh are mutter because they come from inside, and the science tells us that it doesn't. They come from the outside. Okay, first thing is, one answer is, when Chazal told us that the worms come from the inside, they weren't talking about Anisakis. They were talking about some other worm. As I mentioned to you, there are worms out there. There are parasites out there that lay their eggs in the fish. They lay these tiny eggs inside the fish. And the worm, the parasite, spends his whole life inside of that fish. That's what Chazal was talking about. When Chazal said that you're not allowed to eat, that you're allowed to eat the worms in the flesh, so there are people who say they were only talking about that one. They were talking about that specific one. But other ones that are parasites of this Anisakis parasite that grow comes from the outside, that's not what they were talking about. Okay? In which case,
from the outside means as an egg or as a worm?
As a worm, coming as a worm from the outside. It's laid as an egg. The parasite in its final stage, which is in a bigger fish than we eat, like a whale or a walrus, a bigger fish, a bigger sea creature, it lays its egg in that, it gives off eggs in that bigger fish, in that bigger host, we call it. The host, it gets excreted from the body. The egg hatches into a worm out in the water. That's where it hatches. And then it gets swallowed by the first fish. It gets swallowed as a worm. We're going to come back to that later. So what stage is life when it's in the water? So he says, when Chazal said that it's a worm that grows in the fish, it's a worm that grows in the fish, they're talking about a very specific one. But the one that we're talking about, our Anisakis, no, that's not what they're talking about. And therefore, this one is also. Okay? Now, the reason to disagree with this is because, firstly, if you ask this is a big word, parasitologist, okay? This is a whole study because there are parasites in all fish. If the people who study this, they think that the rule, most worms are like this. Most worms are like the Anisakis, that they grow, come from the outside and grow in the flesh and then grow in the intestines and make their way into the flesh. So this is not, Anisakis is not an exception. Anisakis is the rule. The exception is the other one. Which leads us to the other point, which is, the Din Shulchan Aruch doesn't say you're allowed to eat this specific worm that's growing in the flesh. It says all worms that grow in the flesh are mutter. If the din is only referring to a very specific worm, how come no one's telling us that? How could it be that the din means you like to eat worms of flesh, there's only one very specific one, when no one tells that. And my Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that. If I open my Shulchan Aruch, it says the worms in the flesh are mutter. Last week, I and Rabbi Fishman.
You used two different terms. You use the worms in the flesh and the worms that grow in the flesh.
Yes.
What is the Lashon of Shulchan Aruch?
The Shulchan Aruch doesn't...
Minza or...
I don't remember offhand the word. I don't remember the words. I went last week with Rabbi Fishbein to show people where the worms are in the fish. Okay, it was held in Brooklyn by a big expert to show people where the worms are. We must have looked at 100 pieces of fish, more than that. The fish just kept on coming out. They looked at all kinds of fish, and there were worms all over the place. Okay, but I want to tell you something. I don't think they even, maybe there was one worm that they found that they thought was mutter. They found dozens of worms that are these Anisakis worms. They were all over the place. So think about this. The Shulchan Aruch says, if you find a worm in your fish, in the flesh of the fish, you can eat it. That's what it says. So I don't remember the exact one. It says, if you find the worms in the flesh, you can eat it. And now we looked at 100 pieces of fish, and we found 50 worms. And the Shulchan Aruch didn't eat any one of those. He only meant the one that was mutter. It's hard to believe. It's hard to accept that when the Shulchan Aruch says, and everybody since then says, you could eat the worms that are in the flesh, they only meant one very specific one. But this one, the 50, they're all over the place. That's not what they had in mind. They didn't mean that. They meant something else. So that leads us right to the next answer, what we'll call the third answer, which is, people say, it's true that nowadays, the Anisakis worms are all over the place, but it didn't used to be like that. The Anisakis used to be not so common. The Anisakis used to be other worms that were more common, and there's some research that shows that there's lots more Anisakis nowadays than there used to be. They're all over the place. And therefore, today, the fish are all full of these Anisakis worms. But were you to have looked 500 years ago, in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, what he would have seen was all the other worms. He would have seen the worms that are mutter, and ours would have been the exception. And therefore, when he said it, then it was true. Now the tables have turned, and now there's only usher worms in the flesh, and therefore, now it's usher.
Because all those worms are coming from the intestines.
Because they're coming from the intestines. The ones that we're seeing nowadays come from the intestines into the flesh. Had the Shulchan Aruch been around in our days, the Mechaber would have said, oh, these are all usher. He was looking at what they were used to.
They would have said they're all
mutter. If he would have seen what we see nowadays, they're saying he would have said they're all usher. And they have all kinds of reasons to explain.
How can you tell by looking at the worm that it went from the intestine into the flesh? How do you know that?
Okay, I'll get to that in the second part. We'll talk about that in the second part. I'm, for now, saying it from the scientific side. Okay, that's how the scientists believe it is. Okay, we'll talk about some of the things that people reason to think that in the second part. So, and they have all kinds of, there are all kinds of reasons given as to why nowadays the worms are different. It ranges from different ways of fishing and different ways of gutting fish and global warming and pollutants, and they have a whole slew of reasons as to why there's more of this than why nowadays there's more of this fish than the other fish. And whichever, what Nishana Hateva, yeah, we have worms do different things, they have all kinds of answers, okay? So, and whichever answer you're going to say, the point is, Chazal were matter what they had in front of them, we have a different tzius in front of us, and therefore, for us, it's us. Okay, now, the difficulty with this is that there isn't very strong science, and we'll talk about this more in the second part, there isn't very strong science to indicate that anything is different today than it was 100 or 500 years ago. The scientists believe it's always been like that. Okay? They don't see any big changes between then and now. And usually, when we want to say, when someone mentions it, we want to say the Stein had heavy, we want to say something dramatically changed, we need to have a serious riot that something changed. As an example, there's a din that if a baby is born in the seventh or the ninth month of pregnancy, that baby can live and will be a healthy baby. But the din is, if the baby is born in the eighth month of pregnancy, that baby is so for sure not going to live that the baby's mukta. You can't even touch it on Shabbos. Okay, now, that's a din brought in Shochrar, but guess what? Nowadays, everybody says, of course that's not true. Nowadays, it happens all the time. My twins were born in the eighth month. They're fine and healthy. They're 12th graders. They're fine and healthy kids. So that is to say, when we see a dramatic change in the Teva, the Teva's changed. It used to be that babies born in the eighth month were not healthy. They couldn't live. And we see that it's true.
That's what everybody says. That's not the way. But the Teva says that the eighth month baby is meant at the moment of conception. The babies are going to be born in the eighth month versus a baby at the moment of conception, which is going to be a seven-month baby. A baby born in the eighth month is, I forgot the term, those babies are one of the son who are born that don't live from the moment of conception. But that a baby could be a preemie is a baby that really could go full term.
So you're saying the Din Shulchan Aruch says a baby born in the eighth month is mukta meant if you know that this is a baby.
Right, which those babies are very real.
I would find it hard to accept that because I don't see, you're standing there, the baby's sitting in your house, okay? It's a nice, Yiddish mama had a baby, and she's sitting there. The Shulchan Aruch says, if it's born in the eighth month, it's mukta. So she's supposed to know, this is that kind of baby.
It's the same way the seven-month babies. You don't have any seven-month babies anymore either.
We do. What does that mean?
A seven-month baby was a baby that came full term in the middle of the seventh month. We don't have such thing. Nobody has a full-term baby. It's a preemie. Moshe Rabbeinu was not a preemie. Moshe Rabbeinu was a full-term baby, just born up to 6 days and 1 month.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. I was about to say the same thing. Okay. So
the third side, the medical knowledge has changed the din of the eight-month baby.
I'm not talking about medicine
has changed.
I'm not talking about babies. You're saying is that there are babies, if we put them into the incubator, they could live longer. I'm not talking about that kind. I'm talking about just plain old babies that never saw an incubator and that live nice, healthy lives without anything. Right. But we medically don't see any difference here. The Gemara holds 7 months can live, 8 months is worse, and then 9 months that we don't. Okay, fine. So according to this answer, if you're going to say this answer, that things have changed, it basically is going to. It should come out that all worms are going to be usher. Because if we're going to follow science on this, all worms are going to be usher. None of the machmirim want to say this because it's a very something strange about this. You're saying is that in the days of Shulchan Aruch, those worms, certain worms were very prominent, and ours didn't exist at all. And nowadays, it's the tables have turned completely, and nowadays the forbidden worms are there all over the place, and not to have mutter worms. Okay, so now we're going to pause here for a second and say like this. We've heard two answers as to how the worms could be usher. Okay? Both of those answers have a derech to them. Both of them have something that doesn't run so smoothly, doesn't fit so well into what we want, what we would guess would be right. But the reason why someone would say this answer is because of the question. We have a question. Remember, we're back to a question. We have to give some answer to this question. How could the din say that they come from inside the flesh, that they grow there, they've spent their whole life in the flesh, when it's not the Matthias. It's not true. The truth is it's coming from the outside. So, because we're stuck, we have to give an answer. So some people hold that these two answers are correct. One of these answers, either that Shulchan Aruch only meant a specific worm, or a variation of that is that he might have meant every worm that he had, but worms are different now. There's a different way that they present themselves. So now we switch to two other answers that are going to tell us why the worms might be mutter.
Do you think these two answers, why are when did they change? Last week, or did they change 100 years ago?
So they don't know. That's part of the weakness.
So people only woke up today.
That's part of the weakness of the answer, is that you're saying something changed without any way of, no evidence or no reason to think that something happened. You know, do you want to say because it's overfishing, so they'll blame it on a specific year, you know, when people started fishing more. So whatever, it's yeah. But they say, who cares? I don't have to know when it changed, and I don't know what happened to my Zaidi. But right now, it's in front of me. I see a fish, a worm that's ushered. So what can I say? It must have changed. What can I do? The Din says this. I see this. Something must have changed. When it happened, you know, who knows?
They say something about life.
Why don't we hear about it first?
Okay, we're getting to that. Wait a second. Yes, wait 1 second. Okay, next answer. In order to explain the next answer, we're going to say exactly what David mentioned, which is like this. The Gemara says, "Hayre kina b'Shabbos is potter." Okay, if a person kills a kina, a lice, the din is if you kill it on Shabbos, there's nothing wrong with that. You're allowed to do it. Why? Because on Shabbos, you're not allowed to kill a living being, but you're only not allowed to kill a living being who comes from a mother and a father. If you have a living being that comes not from a mother and a father, then there's no issue to kill it on Shabbos. Okay. What the reason, why you're allowed to is not relevant to us. But that's the din. So that's what the din is. You're allowed to kill a kina on Shabbos, a lice. So until 150 years ago, everybody understood that to mean that lice come by themselves. They what we call spontaneously generate. They come from themselves, like maggots come from garbage, and lice come from also from sweat. They just come appear out of no place, and that was considered that was science in those days. Science that these come from nothing. They don't come from a mother and a father, and therefore you're allowed to kill it. And everybody was happy with it. There were no questions. Came along 150 years ago. Louis Pasteur proved that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. It doesn't exist. And since then, the accepted science has been that nothing comes from itself. Living things don't come from no place. They don't come. Maggots don't come out of garbage. That's not true. They don't. They come from flies that lay eggs that turn into maggots. However, they understand the process of what happens. So, what happened to din? Here we have a din that says that if someone kills a louse on Shabbos, they didn't do anything wrong. So what happened to it? I don't see it. How can that be? Doesn't make any sense. So now, before I tell you what the answer is, I'll tell you what the answer is not. Nobody said that we have different lice than we used to have. And nobody said, oh, the lice have started reproducing differently than they used to. Those weren't possible answers. They say, our lice must be different than those lice. In other words, they didn't say the other two answers that we said. That's not what people said. They had a different understanding. And I'm going to tell you an answer, but it's going to be instructive. The point is not for the detail of the answer. The answer is that this is a very famous thing from Rav Dessler. He says the following. The Torah was given to human beings. The Torah was given to us to do the din as we see things. That is to say, there are some times that the din tells us to assume something even though the truth is not that way. What I mean is as follows. The lice, when they lay their eggs, the eggs are microscopic. That is to say, human beings don't see those eggs. Human beings, when me and you would look at it, don't see anything. To our appearance, our understanding, the lice, all of a sudden, one day, there was nothing, and then the next day, there was a louse over there. It came from no place. If I see a cat give birth, I see the mother cat and the baby cat. When I see a louse hatch, it appears to come out of no place. So even if the truth might be that it comes from a mother and a father louse, that doesn't make a difference. What's important is, what is the human perception? The human perception is that it comes from no place. If something appears to come from no place, then the din is, it came from no place. Okay. As an example, Rabbi Heinemann spoke about this. He gave the following example. There are three tshuvas in Igros Moshe about very similar shilohs, printed one after another. And the tshuvas are about, if I remember correctly, were about a microphone, a hearing aid, and a telephone. And the questions were using them on Shabbos and being yotzei mitzvahs heard over there. In other words, if I make havdalah and you're, 10 miles away, hearing my havdalah over the phone, are you yotzei? And in these three tshuvas, Ramosh appears to say opposite dinim. For some of them, he says, it's like you did it. Some of them, it's not like you did it. So what's going on? It's like three tshuvas in a row. What, what's going on? How come sometimes it's like my voice and sometimes it's not like my voice? So Rabbi Hyman explained like this. He said, when I speak into a telephone, the sound that you hear is the same sound that I made. And the same thing with the hearing aid. He says, but a microphone, the sound that I made, you hear it much louder than I said it. So even though in, electrically, mechanically, they all work the same, but to the person looking from the outside, if you take someone from south, from deep Africa who never saw a microphone in his life and you bring him here, he would say is, the telephone is dragging my voice from here to there, but it's really my voice. And the hearing aid is taking my voice and putting it into your ear. The microphone is making a new voice. The microphone appears to be making new because I'm always speaking this high and you're hearing it this high. So the perception is that one is my voice and one is not my voice, and therefore the din follows the perception. The din is based on what it appears to the layperson, not what the deep technicalities of what's really going on. And therefore, therefore when the Gemara says that the lice comes from no place,
does the Mishnah say this?
No, he doesn't. No, Rabbi Hanan doesn't say this. Rabbi Hanan, a Talmud of his, saying that's what he... Rabbi Moshe says, the scientists are not clear what it is, and therefore I'm saying that this is your voice and this is not your voice. That's what he says. Rabbi Hanan says, honestly, but how can you put three truths? One time you say it's his voice, one time you say it's not his voice. How can you say that? So he says, because Rabbi Moshe didn't, so to speak, care what the truth was. And I know that sounds funny. You don't care what the truth is. Because for this situation, the truth is not what counts. It's the perceived truth that's what counts. That's what the thing wants us to look at. So over here, the lice is considered to have come from no place, and therefore it's not considered to have had a father or mother. Now, I'm saying this, I said to be instructive. The point is like this. We had a question. The Gemara says the lice comes without parents. It has no parents. And the science tells us that they did have parents. So what did Poskim do when they saw that question? What they did was, they said, we must have misunderstood the Gemara. When the Gemara said it didn't have parents, they didn't say, we have new lice. They said, we didn't understand the Gemara correctly. When the Gemara says it doesn't have a father and a mother, it didn't mean that it doesn't really have a father and mother. It meant this, it doesn't have a perceived father and mother. So what we did was, when we had this question, we re-understood the Gemara. We didn't say there are new lice. We said we didn't read the Gemara correctly. Our simple reading of the Gemara was that it doesn't have parents. Well, that doesn't make sense. We now know that it does have parents. So we said, we didn't understand the Gemara correctly. What the Gemara meant to say was, it doesn't have perceived parents. Okay, I'm not trying to convince you of the answer. I'm trying to show you, as a way of answering a kasha, is to say, maybe I misunderstood originally. Okay, so, and the same kind of thing is used to answer about the worms and the fish, which is to say, people give answers. I'll give you some of them in a second. But people say the Gemara uses words that say, minei kogavli, the worms come from, they grow from inside the fish. Simply that means they're spontaneously generated. Now that we know that can't be true, we'll re-understand the Gemara to mean different things. If the Gemara's explanation meant something else, then the worms are going to stay mutter. Okay, so for example, one of the answers given this is what Rabbi Cohen was mentioning, was hinting at, one of the answers is that when I told you that this worm, it lays its eggs, and they hatch in the water, and then from the water they get swallowed by a little fish, the worms get swallowed by a little fish, and then a bigger fish, v'chahena. Well, I didn't tell you the whole story. Okay, when those worms are hatched in the water, okay, the size of the worm is, and this is just hold cup for a second, okay, the length of the worm is, okay, is the same as the width of between 2 and 4 pieces of hair. Okay, if you put 2 pieces of hair next to each other, side by side, the width of those 2 pieces of hair next to each other, that's how long the worm is. Okay, and how wide is the worm? It's the width of 1/7 of a piece of hair. And to make it even more is, the worm is clear. Okay, it has a drop of an off-white color to it. Okay, so imagine this tiny speck floating around in the water. That tiny speck, which is being called a worm, a larvae of a worm, okay, is so amazingly tiny, and it's clear that there's no way that a person could see that in the water. Nobody ever scooped up a cup of water and said, I have 4 Anisakis worms floating around in here. Maybe a scientist did it with a microscope, but no person ever looked into was swimming in their swimming pool and noticed, look at those Anisakis floating around. It doesn't happen like that. They're so tiny, it's not possible to see them. So one answer is, one explanation for the Gemara is that since the, very similar to what was said about the lice, since the worms when they're in the water are not visible, to the naked eye no one could see them, so when they when they enter into the, when they start to grow to size that they are visible, they've done that inside the fish. They never had a life outside the fish because their life outside the fish was not anything that's perceptible to human beings. It's, scientists have studied it and watched and see where the eggs hatch from and this and that. They have this, figured this out that it goes from a whale into this little tiny shrimp. But most of us would never see that. None of us would ever see that. Even the scientists themselves wouldn't see that. Okay? So one answer is, Mineka Gavli means is that not that it actually grows from in the fish, but it's full life of visible life is inside the fish. A variation of that is, that these worms that we're talking about are not the worms you see, you know, walking around in your yard. Okay, these are parasites. Most fish have parasites in them. Parasite means is that it doesn't have its own independent living. It doesn't live on its own. It only can live when it's attached to some other host. Okay, it lives off the host. So the others who say is, what the Gemara means, Mineka Gavli means to say is, any animal, any worm, that doesn't have independent life, but its life is always part of something else, it lives off of somebody else, its whole life is spent inside of a host, it doesn't have its own independent status. We don't say, oh, this is a worm and worms are awesome. We say, today this is a cod. And tomorrow, if he moves into a whale, then he's a whale. He doesn't have, it's like saying, we don't judge, is the liver of a fish, is that liver a cod or is it a tray fish? No, we say, it's part of a fish. It doesn't have, we don't look at it independently. We say, it's part of something else. These worms also are considered part of the fish. And there are other answers along these lines. And some people say is, I don't even know what the answer is. It doesn't bother me. The Gemara says something, I don't understand what the Gemara means now, because scientists are telling me not like that. So there must be another trap in the Gemara. Okay? And they would rather say this doichik, because this doichik is maintaining the din. The din says the worms are mutter. And so I say, oh, the Gemara, when the explanation is not what you, the simple explanation, there's a more complicated explanation, in which case the din stays as is.
Does it have a life of its own underwater, though? I'm not sure I understood that. Does it have a life?
Okay, so what it is that it has
Because if it did, then it wasn't just...
It has a temporary life after the egg hatches until it makes its way into its first host. It doesn't have any meaningful life by itself. It's always... If we have a worm in the intestines of the fish, we say that worm had its own life. It was floating around the world by itself, and one day it got swallowed by another fish. So then it got swallowed. It had its own independent life. This one has at a very early, what they call larval stage, a very early non-functional stage, it was floating around the water, but all of its functional life was inside of another fish. Doesn't move along until it gets another fish. Okay, so what I laugh when this, you see, look what they're trying to say. Sorry, I'm not telling you that every one of these answers is the easiest answer to say. You also have a hard time saying it doesn't fit so smoothly into the words. Mineka Gavli doesn't read as smoothly into the words. I'll say it again: is that each of the answers that we're going to talk about today has difficulty in what we're trying to say. And the question we're trying to do is: we have a shaila here. We have a question. The din says this. The Matthias that we see tells us not like that. What are we going to push? Are we going to say the din stays the way it is and we'll be mocked for something else? Or are we saying, well, the Matthias says that comes from the outside, we'll be mocked for the other one. Okay? The last answer, the answer that I just told you is favored by lots of literature poiskim. Okay? That's their kind of answer. The next thing that they're favored is a more Hasidic approach. If I can racially profile people, okay. And which is like this: their answer. It's not terribly different, but their answer is as follows. The Gemara says that the worm grows from inside. Science tells you that the worm comes through the stomach, and this whole life cycle, there's a new word, life cycle, goes through the whole thing, and it bores its way into the flesh. And it says, scientists have made mistakes before. You think I'm going to throw out a thing because the scientist told me that? I don't care what the scientist said. In the head. So the scientist thinks like that. That's why. Does that bother me? I don't care. The din said, if it perishes, then there isn't any question about the din. The din is that the worm's growing in the flesh of mutter. Science says, who cares? Doesn't bother me. No skin off my back. Science says not like that. That's a different approach. Okay? It's not radically different than the one beforehand. It says, I don't have to explain it tomorrow. You have to tell me. They just said that to me from an earlier Kleisenberg rabbi, who had, when this shayla, you should just know, did not come up now. This shayla comes up every 10 years. So this, the Rebbe said, he says, this you telling me? You bring these scientists? He said, they translated to me all the things that the scientists said. They read me the whole report. He said, the first week I told my wife, don't make any fish. There's bugs in them. But then they said, do me a favor, translate me the whole report, what the scientists said. Translate to me, I mean, Yiddish, Hebrew, I don't know what they translated to. He looked, he said, the whole thing's full of the courses. He says, the Gemara says, they come from the outside, from the inside. What are you making me crazy? He said, I don't want to hear from this thing, okay? That's it. So lots of Chassidus Paiskim say like that, and I'm telling you, it's not really so different from what the Lifshitz Paiskim was saying. They're just saying is that I accept the signs, and I'll find a way to work that into the Gemara. And these
Paiskim... The problem is that the Halacha also gives us that distinction between fish that's not on the outside and fish that's not on the inside. So that the Halacha itself is letting me know that fish that's not on the outside is a problem.
That's correct, yes.
And so the Halacha itself is lending its problem towards the scientific evidence, and this came from the outside, so then that's the problem.
That's true.
Not just
but
that that's the halacha.
But it's as clear as anything.
The halacha itself is addressing the
that's science. True. That there is such a thing as a worm that comes from the outside. There is such a worm that comes from the outside. But the din is clear as day that if it's in the flesh, don't worry about that. Don't be concerned that maybe it came from the outside. Don't say maybe the worm that's in my flesh came from the outside. Not my problem. I can assume that came from the inside. So I'm allowed to assume that. Well, so what happened? I might have come from the inside. Chazal told me not to worry about that. For what, either because I know why they're telling me that, or because I don't know why they're telling me that, so I'm just ignoring that. Okay. So, I'm going to move now. So we've now seen these five different answers. Okay, and we're going to, between these five answers, two of them said that the fish, that the worms would be usher. And two of them said that the worms would be mutter. Okay. Now, Baruch Hashem, I asked, Rabbi Cohen said he's going to come here because he's going to help us afterwards understand why we should favor one, or what we should do in this situation when what happens like this. Most of the American Hashgachas, some even non-American Hashgachas, and all of the bigger experts, halachic bug experts, think that these worms are mutter. At the same time, a number of very prominent poskim and as well have said that these worms and the fish are usher. Okay, so what are we supposed to do in that situation? Here, I think that the mutter. I'm not the only one who thinks that it's mutter. The experts, the people who are experts in halachas having to do with bugs here and in England and in Eretz Yisrael think that it's mutter. Yet, very prominent poskim have said that it's usher. So what am I supposed to do in that situation? What should I do when I'm faced with that kind of situation when I work for the CRC. We had long discussions with Rabbi Schwartz. Rabbi Schwartz said that it's mutter. So I guess from professionally, it's easy for me. Rabbi Schwartz said, he's the boss. He said it's mutter. I have no problem. What am I supposed to do at home? Okay, what am I supposed to do? Or if he's my rabbi, I spoke to Rabbi first. He says it's mutter. So I say, Rabbi first said that it's mutter. So if you're a person who asks your child to Rabbi first, so shouldn't you just say, Rabbi first said it's mutter? Okay with me. Or he says, wait a second, all these important places can say that's us, sir. So, but that's why Rabbi Cohen said he's gonna stay. Not so much he wants to hear what I have to say, but he's gonna. When anyone has those kind of questions, that's for him. Okay, that's a very it's a serious halacha and hashkafa question. And Rabbi Cohen, Baruch Hashem. Okay. Now we're gonna go on to speak now about some of the evidence or proofs that people have brought to say that they know that the fish move across, or that things have changed, they migrate, or things have changed. And before we start that, I want to just give three introductions, three, so to speak, ground rules that we have before we start that discussion. One is, the Shulchan Aruch says, the working assumption is, worms in the flesh are mutter. If you want to say to me that the worms are, you want to prove to me that they're usher, you have to prove to me that they're usher. I'm coming with the assumption, I'm coming with a firm basis to tell me that they're mutter. You have to prove to me that it's usher. I don't have to prove that they're mutter. You have to prove that they're usher. Second is, a number of poskim who have talked about the shayla have said, well, worms are usher mitaraisa. A worm that's usher is usher mitaraisa. But I don't know how many lavim, you could have quite a lot if you eat it. Therefore, to suffer derisa, you have to be machber. That's true. However, if this is not a fish din, if you have a piece of a vegetable, and that vegetable, more than half the times that vegetable has bugs in it, mid derisa, you have to get the bugs out. Midaraisa, you're mechuyev to clean the bugs out, or else you can't eat it. You have to assume there's bugs in it. If less than half of the vegetables have bugs in them, then midaraisa, you could just eat it as is. Midrabanan, Chacham said, what are you doing over here? 30% of the time it has a bug in it. You have to clean it out or check for bugs before you eat the food. But that's a drabanan. So one of the vadim, not in this area, but in a different area, said, they decided as follows. This worm is a serious shiloh. Is it mutter or zrasser? So when we have a fish that's infested to the point that more than half of them have the worms, which some fish do, they're going to be machmir. When less than half do, and it's only the shiloh for drabanan, they're going to be mekel. So in considering this, you have to keep this in mind, that not always is it a shiloh for derisor. Sometimes it's a derisor. Sometimes the worm, which is us with derisor, is for me only a shiloh for drabanan. It's not drabanan because of bittul, because for two sides. That one is because you could easily remove it. Then if you want to,
if you cook it, if you get a fish, a sardine in a can, you can take it out.
So I'm not saying in every specific case. I'm not saying it's every specific case, but in most cases you can easily pull it out. You would notice it and you could get it out. If I spent 5 minutes with you, you would be able to find it and you could pull it out. And they're not small and they're not invisible. They're nice sized. You can pull them out. And also, those rules of bittul apply when we have a vada yisur that got mixed into something, then we have rules of bittul. The rules of bittul aren't set up for cases when I maybe have an isur. Maybe have an isur, we follow roif. With the rest, we follow roif. But the rabbanim would say, if it's matzu, then I have to look out for it. It's a different set of rules than the rules of what bittul b'shishu. It's not a rule bittul b'shishu in this case. Bittul b'shishu is after you know this isur.
Even if there's more than half,
I'm
just saying.
That's true. Also, beriyu is another reason why it's in that one. That's a rabbanim rules, yes. Okay. And lastly is that there's something called the scientific method. And when we think about the evidence that we're listening to, we have to make sure that the evidence we're hearing is not someone's observation, but rather is scientific. I'll give you an example of what that means. If we have 10 people who have the flu, and to each of those 10 people, we tell them that every day they should drink 4 cups of Pepsi. Okay? And at the end of 2 weeks, we look at these 10 people, and we see that, lo and behold, all 10 people got better. So I say, that proves that drinking Pepsi makes you better than flu. Pepsi is a cure for the flu, because I had 10 people, I gave them each 4 cups of Pepsi, and at the end of 2 weeks, they were all better. So that proves that Pepsi makes people better than flu. Okay, of course, that's silly, because that didn't prove anything. Maybe they would have gotten better without Pepsi. So I have to have 10 other people who I don't get Pepsi to. Maybe Pepsi makes it worse. Maybe this guy was taking cough medicine and this guy was not taking. I have to control the situation before I can prove that Pepsi makes people. Maybe it does. I have no idea. But just by giving it to 10 people wouldn't prove anything. The scientific method would say is I have to do controls and I have to do groups that don't get the treatment. I have to do other things to make sure what I'm seeing is not maybe dependent on something else. So we'll see how that's relevant to what we're talking about. Okay. The people who want to prove that it's usher have 3 reasons to say that 3 proofs, that the fish, that the worms migrate from the stomach into the flesh. The first one is that the fish that grow in the wild, that swim around in the wild, have these worms in them, and the ones that are farm raised do not have them. What that means to say is, you may or may not know that some fish, instead of being grown out in the ocean, instead of living in the ocean and then fishermen going to find them, the fishermen grow them in their own in the swimming pool, okay? And then they're right there in the swimming pool they want them. When they're ready to harvest, when they're grown to a big enough size, they just take them out of the pool, okay? So they keep them in their backyard. They don't have to go out and find them in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. They grow them themselves in their own controlled environment. That's called a farmed fish. So farmed fish, by and large, don't have these worms in them. So they say, see, that proves that the worms are coming from whales, and the whales give off the eggs and goes into the little fish and then into the bigger fish and into the bigger fish, because out in the wild, all those things exist. In the swimming pool in my backyard, there aren't any of those things, and therefore there's no worms. So that proves that the worms are coming from the outside. If you take away the outside, take away those other life forms that don't need to be there, then they don't exist. That proves that the worms come from the outside. So the reason to say not like that, I don't have a scientific reason to say like that, is that there are lots of things that go different in farm fish than wild fish. That is to say, not everything that may be the reason, well, that may not be the reason. For example, do you know that canned salmon, sorry, learned recently, canned salmon is always made from wild salmon. If I buy a piece of salmon in the store, I'm going to get farmed salmon, because that's cheaper. Canned salmon is always made from wild salmon. Why? Why do they pay more to make it? The reason it has something to do with that the flesh of wild salmon is harder and it works better in a can than farmed salmon. The farmed salmon flesh comes out is not as strong or not as tough or not as whatever, and therefore it doesn't work well for making canned salmon. Okay, now, would me and you have guessed that? Do I know the reason for that? No. Obviously, the living conditions in a swimming pool are not the same as living conditions out in the Pacific Ocean, and therefore, for whatever reason, the controlled environment lends itself towards one thing over a different thing. So that, without knowing more about it, that doesn't prove that they come necessarily from the outside.
Even if it comes from the outside, if, like you said, it doesn't have an independent existence, it's irrelevant.
That's correct. Even if we were to prove that, we'll get to that in a second. Thing. Even if were we to say that it came from the outside, this is a proof that they say that it comes from the outside. We're going to talk about three proofs that it comes from the outside. Coming from the outside might not mean anything. That might not be the end of the day, just because you proved from the outside. I'm not saying that proves it, but that just... Okay. Next, they say this.
Are you trying to say that it's nearer than that comes from the outside? Is that proof?
They're not saying it's nearer than nine. And I shouldn't say that. There are those who have said that the worms are nearly nine in the water. Okay? There's two arguments about being in the water. Some say that it's nearly nine. I don't know what they're talking about. It's not something I can understand. How you can imagine that thing is nearly nine? It's hard. I don't get it. The others say it doesn't make a difference if it's nearly nine. They say the thing is, if it's nearly nine later, it doesn't make a difference if it's nearly nine earlier. Now, I can imagine such a shita. I can imagine the shita. The person who we know don't agree with that. They say you have to look at things at each stage, whether it's nearly nine then. What do I care that it's nearly nine now? And you think, now it's nearly nine, but it has to swim in the water. When it swam in the water, it wasn't nearly nine. So why do I care that it swam in the water when it was not? How do I even know that happened? Me and you could never tell that. We have to use magnification to figure it out that it swam in the water. There's no way to realize, no person could see that. Okay, so that's a shita that some people hold that we don't get. We don't understand that shita. We don't agree with the shita. Don't understand it.
Okay. Is that the fact that they're trying to show that they've been in control with the farm fish, it's different than the wild fish. Are they trying to say that's a way that we could perceive, like an argument with this perception argument?
No, because there's nothing perceptible about it. That's just a guess. We're saying it doesn't come in the farm fish, so I'm guessing that the reason is because they come from the outside.
Well,
I'm not saying
scientifically. Why do we need to show that from this experiment?
Because scientifically. Because they're trying to say is we don't want to trust science. We're trying to say is science. Point like this: you're saying to them the science is not like they didn't. They say, no, we don't want to say the science is not like they didn't. I say not like they didn't. I can see it myself. If just in the science, I'm sort of facing putting Chazal against the scientists, then I know that the Chazal is going to win. So I'd rather say it's me who can see it. Another proof.
Shulman Aruch is probably not dealing with only with farmed fish.
You know, he never had farmed fish. No, but they're using that as a proof. They're using farmed fish as a proof. The farmed fish proves that it comes from the outside. Same because
we have to have the question and answer for you.
Okay, we'll continue. Fine, we're getting there. The next proof is the location of these worms. And what I mean by that is as follows. A fish, the flesh on the top of the fish, like the first top, like two-thirds of the fish, is thick. And then on the bottom, the part of the flesh that covers the fish's stomach, the fish's intestines, is a thinner piece of flesh. It's called a belly flap. That's what it's called. Okay, it's the bottom, and Kishmoy can't do it. It's a piece of thinner flesh that covers the belly, the underside of the fish. And what they find is that these worms congregate in the belly flap, and they're almost never found in the other parts of the flesh. Okay? Which gives the impression that they're coming from the stomach. The intestines are right there. Excuse me. The fact that the worms are always in the belly flap and not in the other parts of the flesh implies if they would just be appearing out of no place, then they would appear out of no place every place. Why are they only in the belly flap? It must be that they're coming from the intestines and they're boring their way through into the belly flap. Okay, now, of course, like we said with the farm fish, there may be other reasons. I don't know, I'm not a worm, and I don't know why you would want to live in this place versus that place, but we don't know what's, maybe it's more hospitable to them, okay? But let's put that aside. Listen to what we're saying. The Anisakis worm finds itself in the intestines and in the belly flap. And therefore, that proves that this worm is usher. Now we turn to them and say, okay, well, what about other worms? What about other worms besides Anisakis worms? Do they do the same thing? Are they also found in the belly flaps? No idea. They have no idea. You know why they have no idea? Because there's a reason why they know so much about the Anisakis worms. It's not because they have stock invested in them, which they do also. That's not the reason. It's because these worms have found their way into humans. People who have eaten raw fish and other kinds of foods have gotten infected with these worms. And it's dangerous for humans. It's not dangerous for fish. It's dangerous for humans to be infected by this parasite. So there's been a lot of scientific research on this worm because it's become a health hazard for humans. And there hasn't been much research on the other ones because they're just a parasite, so to speak. Who cares what they do? So listen to what we're saying here. We're saying this worm is different than all other worms. Chazal meant certain worms. This one, they didn't mean this one. Well, how can you say that without knowing everything about the other worms also? How can you say this one is different? I say this one is different because it's only found in the belly flap. But what about the other ones? What about the other worms? Are they also only found in the belly flap? How can you prove to me that this worm is different when you haven't researched the other worms? You don't know anything about the other worms. They say, I don't have to know about the other worms. How can you say that this worm is different when you don't know whether the other worm does the same thing? Because guess what? If all the worms are only found in the belly flap, then you can't say it proves that they come from inside, because then they're all usher. And then the Shulchan Aruch has left out in the cold. Right? Then you have no answer to explain the Shulchan Aruch. If you want to be able to say mine is different, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch didn't mean this case, you have to look at both sides of the picture. And lastly about this is that you'd be surprised to hear that one of the early Achronim, called the Hagoyish Aridur, says, what happens when you find a worm that's moving in between the intestines and the flesh? What do you do with that worm? Is the worm mutter or is it usher? In the flesh, in the intestines, it's mutter, and in the flesh, it's usher. So, what do you do about that worm?
The intestines
is usher. Did I say opposite? I'm sorry. It's usher, and the flesh is mutter. Because what do you do with that worm? So, the Gershar Guru says it's mutter. The worm is mutter. He says because it's probably coming from the flesh into the intestines. In other words, he was looking at a fish that had worms in the intestines and the flesh, and what he said, exactly what we're describing. Because guess what? The worms have been doing the same thing since Shechus and Mibrachus. And what did he say the din is? The din is that it's mutter. So you're telling me the fact that they're near each other proves that they're usher? Well, the Hagadah Shaul Jew didn't think that. Okay. Last proof that they bring is, you may have heard this, there are tunnels. Okay? That there are tunnels in between the intestines and the flesh. And those tunnels are the size of a worm. So that's the way the worms, that proves that the worms move from the intestines into the flesh. Okay, now, these tunnels are, the only one who's ever seen these tunnels are rabbis. Okay, I'm not kidding. There isn't science on these tunnels. So no one really knows how common these tunnels are, or how often they are. What I'm saying is that the rabbis who have seen them, and they'll show them to the other rabbis. I don't need to put down the rabbis. You know, these are my friends. I don't need to put them down. I mean, is that it's not something that has science on it as to how often do they happen. Maybe they happen only, I don't know, maybe once in every 1,000 fish that they have them. We don't know how often they are. And one thing we do know is that the tunnels, if me and you looked at the fish, we wouldn't see the tunnels. Okay? The tunnels, you can only see them with ultraviolet light. Okay? If you looked at these tunnels, you're not going to pick up these tunnels. So the din probably doesn't really care about tunnels that people can't see. As we talked about before, things that are not can't be perceived don't really count. And also, two more things, is that Shevet HaLevi, Rav Osser, is probably the most prominent person who has said that the worms are usher and written a tshuva about them. Okay? One of the few people who has actually written a tshuva to explain why it's usher. He says, everyone agrees, that there are worms that go from the intestines into the flesh. Even those who say that, even the din is that the worms in the flesh are usher, there are some worms that come from the intestines. Everyone agrees that the worms in the flesh are mutter, even though some come in from the intestines. How can that be? He says because it's such a rarity, it happens so infrequently that the din doesn't concern itself with the fact that it sometimes goes across. He uses that to explain a machlokes. It's not important to us. But he says this, even those who say that it's mutter in the flesh agree that sometimes it comes in from the intestines. And that's okay. Some come in the intestines, and those will be usher. You don't have to worry about that. It's so rare that you don't have to worry about that. So you're going to show me a tunnel, you're going to show me a proof that it does happen that a worm comes from the intestines into the flesh. So what? The shaven lady, the oyster says, that's acceptable. For once in a while it happens. It's only usher if you show that it happens all the time. I mean, if it's common to happen like that, then it would be usher. So he says, according to what they're telling me that it happens all the time, therefore it's usher. That it should happen sometimes, that doesn't bother him. That's understood that it could happen sometimes, that it wouldn't make it usher. Okay, and lastly, of course, is our HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I mentioned before, and that said that fish passing, the worms passing between the two sides is still mutter. Okay. Okay. One more. Yeah, we're almost done. The people who want to say that the worms are usher also say that there have been two different changes have gone on since the days of the Shulchan Aruch. Again, they have to say that they want to say there's a change in order to explain why the Shulchan Aruch would say that, but the Gemara would say that it's mutter, and we would say that it's usher. One is, there are studies that show that there's more Anisakis worms nowadays than there used to be. So they want to say is considerably more Anisakis than there used to be. So they want to say is that maybe in the days of Shulchan Aruch, it was so rare to have one of these worms, so he could say, you know, with clear conscience that all worms and fish are mutter. But nowadays that we have more of them, nowadays that we have so many of these kind, now we have to say they're usher. Okay, now, as I mentioned to you before, the reason why science is focusing on this Anisakis worm is because of a health concern, because it has started to infect people. The studies don't say that there's more Anisakis and less of something else. They're only focusing on this specific worm to say is, be more concerned about the health because there's more and more of them than there used to be. There's more and more of all kinds of worms. There's more and more of all kinds of insects and worms all over the place. So the studies don't prove that this, don't justify the claim. The claim is there's more of this and there's less of that. There's no studies that prove that. The studies say is there's more Anisakis. It doesn't say there's less of the other one. We have no reason to think that the ratio of Anisakis to other things is different today than it used to be. I told you, when we looked at 100 pieces of fish, and there were Anisakis all over the place, and none or almost none of the ones that they think are mutter. We don't have any reason to think that that ratio was different today than it was 1,000 years ago. Okay, now, I'm going to say this, just to... You wrote this at the beginning, Sanford Amnosa B'tibiduchas B'tibiduchusa, he's supposed to say a joke. The Rebbe is supposed to start off a little lightly when he gives a shiur to help people keep them awake. So we're doing the opposite. We're doing it at the end. Okay, which is, there's someone who, I say it just for the humor of it, which is, one of the people who said it's usher wrote that the Anisakis worm didn't even exist in the time of Shulchan Aruch. Because the first reference you find to this worm is in the late 1700s. You first start to see talk about it in scientific literature. The Shulchan Aruch was written about 200 years before that, so the worm didn't even exist at the time of Shulchan Aruch.
Okay. No,
it's worse. It's worse than that. So, the silliness of this is that when other Mauritians saw animals, so he gave names, I shouldn't say that, other Mauritians gave names to the animals, but things like worms and even animals didn't have scientific names to them. In the 1700s, people were classifying and organizing life on this planet and giving scientific names and families and genuses and all kinds of things, you know, organizing the names of things. And in 1767, a guy named Carl Linnaeus gave the name to this worm. And he called it Anisakis simplex. That he gave the name of it and put it into a certain category, however they organized plant life. So the reason why the name Anisakis doesn't appear before 1767 is because it didn't have that name until then. That's when somebody got up one day and said, okay, let's give him a name. So they gave him a name as of that day. So, of course, he wasn't called that name before that. That was not in literature because, of course, it existed. It's been around since other Mauritian. But it just didn't exist because it didn't have that name until then. Okay. So now, lastly, we're going to say is, we'll talk about evisceration. Evisceration is when you take a fish out of the water, the insides of the fish are not desirable, and you clean them all out. The process is called evisceration. You gut out the inside of the fish. Nowadays, the claim is that nowadays they eviscerate fish differently than they used to. It used to be you caught a fish at the pond, you caught the fish, you right away cleaned out all the insides, and then you ate it, basically right away. You had no refrigeration, no freezer, so you ate it right away. Nowadays, when they catch fish on a boat, they catch the fish and they keep it refrigerated for a couple of days, and they may not get around to eviscerate it for a couple of days, maybe on the boat, or maybe when it gets back to land, because they're able to refrigerate fish and keep them for longer. Therefore, that gives a chance, and the anisakis they claim is don't penetrate the flesh when the fish is alive. So now that it's in the fridge, the fish dies. The dead, now the anisakis has a chance to penetrate it, which my Zaidi didn't have that, because they had got out the fish right away. Okay. And in fact, they did a test. They did a test. This is a one-time test, but they did it like this. They were in a... Rabbis, Mashkichim, were in a place, and they were checking for worms and fish, and they went through thousands of fish and didn't find one worm. Okay, so obviously something was good about this batch. They weren't finding any worms in this. They took 10 of the fish from that batch, put them out on the table, and left them there overnight. When they came back in the morning, there were worms in the flesh. Okay? 9 out of the 10 had worms in the flesh. They said, you see that the worms didn't penetrate when the fish was alive, and they did penetrate if the fish died. So that proves to you that the fish migrate into the flesh when they're not alive. So that's another example of what, that's a variation of what we're saying, the science say that it has to do with the way we eviscerate, is to see when we didn't eviscerate, they moved into the flesh. So now, what's difficult about this is that we need to be more scientific about how we look at this kind of a test. You know, if I leave fish out on the counter and leave it out overnight, it does all kinds of things that wouldn't happen if it's being refrigerated. In this test that they did, they haven't even printed what they did in the test, but let alone to really see, is that what happened? Is it only because the fish was left to sit out that it didn't move in, that it moved into it? And most of the fish, most of the worms that are found in the flesh are, or many of them are encased already. That is to say, there's proofs that they've moved in when the fish was alive. They're trying to ask by saying that the worms moved in if they died, and they're not necessarily can they prove that. And this is, there are there's a Gemara that gives the impression that they didn't used to eviscerate fish the way we think that they did. And the fish would sit for a couple of days before they eviscerate it. So again, saying to us that the change is not as dramatic as they're making it. The change is really what they're doing nowadays is very similar to what they used to do. Okay. So I'm just going to summarize if I can for you. We start off with a question. We have the worms in fish appear to be doing, or the science tells us that they appear to be doing things that the din would say it's usher, yet the din tells us that it's mutter. The din tells us that the worms in the flesh are mutter, and the science and the other evidence seems to tell us that the worms in the flesh are usher. And there's been a debate, that's what we're here to talk about, there's been this debate as to how to approach that question. Depending on how you answer that question will depend on, some people will therefore say the worms are usher. Others will say because of that the fish are mutter. And we now turn for Rabbi Cohen, who's going to tell us now what we should do. Now that we've heard, some people say that it should be mutter. Some people say that because of that it should be usher. So we hear different sides. And we hear, you know, good and bad about each side. Each side has reasons to think that it might be this way and that way. So thank you for listening to me. If you have questions, or we wait for Rabbi Cohen to say his piece.
First, other questions. This is really cool.
Ravos Navarasa, is this the one who's Mata the Eras? With the same
reference? No. So it's a good question. Someone said to me, if I shouldn't, if Ravosa didn't get it right about the words and the fish, then maybe I shouldn't carry outside either. I'm not sure it's connected. Say. No. The father is also Mata. The question that he said?
Yeah.
His question was that in West Rogers Park, when the era was built, they brought certain shadows about the era to Rav Ozer, the same Rav Ozer that I mentioned. And they said to him, should we build an era, should we not build an era? And he wrote a tshuva saying, yes, it's okay to build an era. So if we disagree with Rav Ozer about whether the worms in the fish are usher, are we therefore not entitled to listen to him when he says that you're allowed to carry an ear? Okay? They don't seem to be related. You know. Go ahead. Okay.
Scientists say they know something. Sometimes it's because they've seen it in order to lessen the record away, like watching something happen under a microscope. Other times, they decide this because of a long series of deductions, because they see that, therefore this and this. In a general sense, where are they with knowing what the life cycle of this worm is?
That's a good question. The question was, when the scientist describes us the life cycle of this worm, and how it, what it does, is that based on direct observation, or is there conjecture, and they're trying to like put pieces together until they've come with that decision? My impression is that it leans towards the second. There are certain parts that they can see and they can actually, you know, detect, but a certain amount of it, it's not. No, you can't sort of like tag an Anisakis and watch its life as it makes its way, you know, from one fish to another. I have a feeling that it leans towards a, so to speak, conjecture, but that doesn't mean to say that it's not good science. But it does mean to say is what what's important about the question is that we come in with an assumption that the worms in the flesh are mutter because they grow there. They come in with an assumption that spontaneous generation doesn't exist. So we're starting from two different sides. If we heard the evidence, we might come to a different decision because we're coming in from different... We're coming in saying, the Gemara says, we take it as a fact. The Gemara says if it's in the flesh, it's mutter, because it grows them in there. Now we'll try to fit our metzias into that, so to speak, into the fact. They're coming from a different angle, and they may have therefore reached different conclusions. Right? So there are those who have argued, like you said, that there's a limit to how much we can trust science because they're coming with a different set of assumptions. That's, you know, there's something to say. Yes.
What major kashrut
field is usher? Which major hashgachas field is usher? Okay. Here in the United States, the major hashgachas that I know of think that it's mutter. Okay. With an exception is the Star K, Rabbi Heinemann. Rabbi Heinemann says, this is basically what he said, I'm going to say it in short. It doesn't make a difference whether I think it's mutter or usher. Important poskim in Eretz Yisrael have said that it's usher. The public expects us to live up to that standard, and therefore, Star K products will live up to that standard. Okay, that is to say, that's not saying I think that it's also. It's saying is that you, the consumer, or some consumers are expecting us to live up to that standard, and therefore we will. The other hashgachos I know, the CRC and the OU and the Chav K think that it's hold that it's mutter. If for some people find it interesting, the Eid HaChavetz also thinks that it's mutter. Others, but I have to explain to you that what's going on here is that there's two different ways of saying something. There are some people, I hope no one gets insulted. Some people are machmir, and some people are mekil. That's one division of people. You're the machmir, you're the mekil. Then there's another way of dividing people in this kind of way, which is saying some people are traditionalist, and some people are more open-minded. Okay, traditionalist as in, I like to do things the way we always did it, you know, don't change anything, and open-minded is like, I'm willing to hear that maybe something is different. Usually, machmirim and traditionalists go together. Usually we put those two people in groups together. Over here, it's the opposite. Here, the traditionalists are saying, the Shulchan Aruch says that it's mutter, but it bothers me. It says that it's mutter in Shulchan Aruch. I'm the traditionalist that says, I'm following what it said. But here, that ends up being the kula. Okay, so the Eder is the traditionalist. They think we do it the way we always did it. You know, we don't want to change it, and that's where that sort of comes from.
And it would seem, not to be cynical, but it would sound like there are machmirim out there that when science will lend to chumras, they will say, look at the metzias, look at science. And when science might lend to kulas, they're going to say, but this is not what we have in our mitzvah.
So as I mentioned, there are those who say that it's a question, and it's a suffix of a derisor. That's what some have said, is that I'm not convinced that it's also, but if since it's a question of a derisor, I'll be machmer. Now, that has a limit to how far it goes, but yeah, that's true. There's nothing wrong with saying that when I'm not sure if it's a question of a derisor, I'm going to be machmer about that. That's
After you cook the fish, is it possible to see the worm?
After you cook the fish, I never tried it, but I don't see a reason why not. What I mean is that...
I never saw the fish. I've eaten the...
You wouldn't see it in a raw fish either. You wouldn't see it in a raw fish either because it tends to curl itself up or put itself together. To you, it looks like a discoloration. As soon as you pull it out, it looks like, you ever see the noodles in traditional soup? You know, it's all long curly noodles? That's what it looks like. It's pretty obvious once you pull it out that it's a worm. But when you look at it inside, it just looks like a discoloration. I mean, fish has lots of discoloration, so it doesn't strike you, you know? So, yeah.
Since you said that all fish are eviscerated, can one assume then, if a worm is found in the fish, that it was from the flesh rather than from the intestines?
Well, we only see the flesh. because when we walk into the fish store, we only see the flesh. So the question is, did it start aside from the flesh, or did it somehow make it there before they got the intestines out? It's, before they eviscerated it, it was worm, it's, you know, ran away and got into the... Oh, it's dangerous if you eat it when it's alive. When it's alive. If you cook your fish, like you know, most sane people do, so if you cook your fish, then you won't have a problem. It's only become a problem more recently when people decided that they would eat fish without cooking it. That's what it was. I was at a gathering of Rabbanim, and it was a 2-day gathering. And the night in between those 2 days, they served sushi. So the one of the rabbis who spoke on the second day said, says the Gemara says, I don't know which one he's talking about, says the Gemara says that you don't make a bracha if you eat raw fish because it's not even edible. He says, how could it be that we're sitting here at a group of rabbis and they served us raw fish? It bothered him. That was his, yeah, go ahead.
So in, my question is just not really about the halacha, but it's about where these fish are located. Where these crabs are located, are they, you know, only Pacific fish, Atlantic fish, Mediterranean fish, you know, ground fish like cod, you know, Atlantic salmon?
They tend to be in saltwater fish because in order for their life cycle requires bigger fish that are saltwater based. They're not, I don't think beyond saying saltwater that there's more that you can be more easily classified which where they come from. There are classifications as in where they're processed. Because there are people who depend, they found that if you in these countries that processing end up with different amounts of infestation at other levels. And there are, if you look, you'll see there are lists out of which fish have or don't have these worms. It's not really clear how accurate or reliable those lists are. I know that they sound very authoritative, but it's not so clear. And a number of hashkachas are working together now to try to get more accurate information to be able to tell you that this, you know, Chilean bass is this as opposed to European or something.
But you can definitely come that it's like everywhere, meaning like both Atlantic and Pacific.
It is both, yes.
Okay, and is it more common like anadromous fish also would have it? Right?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, like salmon that go upstream.
The reason. One of the right, so they pick up the worm when they're out in the saltwater. They only go back into the freshwater to spawn. So by that point, they've already been infected. They already picked it up. If they grew only in like
white fish,
white. I'm trying to which water they come from.
White fish is a freshwater fish.
Right, so Lake Superior. That's what I'm trying to say. Lake Superior white fish supposedly does not have it in it, and presumably that's because that's a freshwater fish that doesn't expose itself to the salt water where it would be exposed to the larger fish and the anasakis, etc. Yeah.
Just you were talking about that things are different as far as the worms that we have now and the numbers and the ratios. We're finding with the ancient carp, we're talking about that things are different once there's an infestation, so that becomes the dominant species. Can you say it's possible that that's happening with worms too?
It's possible, but yeah, you'd have to prove to me that it could be that one. Okay.
Okay. The practical question of the canned fish, you mentioned that as part of your argument, which one is right or wrong. Is there any segmentation? I mean, in terms of OU or CRC, which says that the canned fish is a problem?
Okay, so let me say this. The good news for some of you is that tuna, for some reason, doesn't have it. Okay, so whoever likes canned tuna or whatever tuna doesn't appear to happen. The salmon, canned salmon, by and large, comes from wild salmon. Excuse me? And therefore does have a problem with these worms in it. The canned salmon does have it. Now, at this meeting last week, where they were showing the fish, they were showing the worms, one of the people involved approached Rabbi Fishbein, and the series he gives hashgacha on salmon in Alaska. And he wants to do the following. He wants to say, I told you that the worms are only found in the belly flap, on one certain part of the flesh. So he said it's like this. Let's go to a factory, have them cut the fish, cut the belly flap off, put the belly flap into the non-kosher canned salmon, and make the kosher canned salmon out of the other part of the fish. Okay? From the fisheries perspective, that's okay. They don't care. Fish is fish. But if they would slice it off, and it's an easy way to, you could slice it in between, give the Jews the top of the fish, and give the people doing kosher at the bottom of the fish. Okay? Just wait till that hits the paper. You know, but give the worms, give to them, and we'll keep the non-worms. You know, but for now, by and large, but now until that happens, they talked about that whether that's feasible. But for now, Cain's salmon is supposedly has it.
Does have it. What you're saying that the OU label or the CRC label on a canned fish, you should bring back to the store and give it back.
No, they think it's mutter. They say that the OU holds, as a seriously, that the worms are mutter. The Shulchan Aruch says that the worms are mutter, so they don't feel so bad. They say the worms are mutter, they're not doing anything to get rid of it. Others who say that the worms are usher wouldn't give hashkach on canned salmon. It's not possible. It's almost impossible. Okay? Yes?
You said that the Eda is matter. Who are the posts who are with hashkachas in Eretz Yisrael that are
the worms? Okay. The three most prominent people who have written that it's Asher are Rabbi Yasher, Rav Ozer, and Rabbi Nissen Kreutz have put into writing that they think that the worms are Asher.
You said I didn't catch what you said?
Rabbi Nissen Kreutz, runs a bet in Bnei Brak, three very prominent people who have said that the worms are Asher. As I mentioned to you, the most American Hashkochas think that it's Mutter. Here in America, people who are not, so to speak, affiliated with the Hashkochas, Rav Shlomo Gissinger is a person in Lakewood. He's the, if we could say, the Rebbe of most of the people who check vegetables in the United States. That is to say, here in Chicago, the restaurants have people checking vegetables. Okay? Those people have learned from Rabbi Eisenbach. Rabbi Eisenbach takes care of food service for the CRC. So, you know, we go back, if you keep going back generations, most of the Rebbeim go back to Rabbi Gissinger. Rabbi Gissinger is like the head of...
Like the fish chain.
Yes, he's on top of the chain of people teaching about bugs in America. In Eretz Yisrael, that person is Rav Moshe Baya. He's a person actually in the United States right now. Is Rav Moshe Baya. He also holds that it's mutter. And in England, it's somebody, Rabbi Fall, in Gateshead, and he also holds that the fish are mutter. The worms are mutter. So here we have people who are... Yes. So these are people who are very involved. I have to just put it into perspective. If you look, you'll find on the internet a write-up of one of Rabbi Baya's recent speeches. He's in America now. He spoke to an audience and told them that they shouldn't eat, if I remember correctly, raisins and corn on the cob. There may have been other things because of bugs. What?
Strawberries.
And strawberries because they have bugs in them. Okay. Well, I'm saying, in the same speech said, but it's okay to eat the worms from the fish. So what I'm saying is that these are people who are not people who are make-up about everything. It's really not like that. He wouldn't eat in my house, okay? Because, you know, my house is full of bugs, according to his view. But yet he looks at the worms and the fish and says, even so, I think that it's mutter. So there's people on both sides. What can I say? That's it.
Do you feel
what?
Strawberries, raisins, what was the third?
Corn on the cob.
The bug experts in the world are saying it's okay, so where is Rabbi Yasher and
their information comes from a group of sources, in particular one person who's promoting the fact of the fish being awesome.
Do you feel that they're giving wrong information?
I didn't say that.
I'm asking.
They've heard both sides of the story. I have no way of knowing whether they're being given a fair hearing of it. I have reason to believe that they are hearing both sides fairly. There are specific halachic issues that we know that Poskim disagree about, and there may be other things that we don't know about. The only one who's written a tshuva was Rav Ozer. The other ones have not written anything. They wrote, you know, I hold that it's Ozer. That shows what he holds. That doesn't explain what he holds. But the only one who's written anything more lengthy is Rav Ozer, who's written two tshuvas about it, to why he thinks that it's Ozer.
Yeah, I think we should thank Rabbi Cohen. If anybody would like to ask any more questions, you're welcome to gather at the table. And this should be the only one. It's Lachal Rabbi, Lachal Rabbi is Bo.